3 of Divided by Werewolves. It's March. Next weekend is daylight savings time, so we get to have all the fucking whatever bait, all the discourse around, oh, should we have what? No. Have it one thing all year long, but it's the wrong thing, and golf courses, fuck off. Like, that's. Like.
That's not for farmers, right? Like, isn't that
Well,
why?
no, don't blame. It's funny. I used to be friends with a guy. I used to work with him. He was a grad student where I worked, and we would hang out on Friday nights and watch the X-Files together, and we'd play Descent at work together.
Nice.
And he would get so irritated when people would blame it. He's like, "Don't blame the farmers." The original,
So
my
sorry.
understanding is the original purpose behind daylight savings was to save energy. So the idea was that, well, if you kind of shifted things so that there was more daylight during the day, then you wouldn't have to have your lights on as much. But then also,
Oh.
if it's lighter for kids going to school, then, they won't get run over. And,
Well, that's important.
I'm all Michael Jordan when it comes to kids, so so it's like, I
I
think
just.
it should be whatever best helps your body. And unfortunately, that's like when you map it to your circadian rhythms, it's not the majority of the year. It's the winter months.
Well, my major problem with it is that I'm really old and I go to bed
Right.
early
Yeah.
and I just
Exactly.
don't want to go to bed when the sun is
When
still
the
up.
sun's up. Exactly. Exactly. Like, shout out to all my parents and young kids though, because shit's about to get real for you. Y'all know how it is. Like, those are the two worst times of the year when you're like, great, for like a week now, my baby is gonna be just completely fucked when it comes
Right.
to the school schedule. But yeah, and there's always some dipshit down here that's just like, oh, let's make it all year long. Man, who the fuck cares? Like, just. We
Yeah.
like this. We got other things to worry about. Yeah. So we're our close. We've got Oscars are week away. Maybe I think it's the 10th. I think it's a week from
Yeah.
today.
Yeah.
So we're gonna talk about the latest season of True Detective. But before we kind of get into that, I have been steadily making my way through all of the Oscar movies. And I only have one left. I have Poor Things is the only one I have
Yeah, I
left.
do want to see that.
And I'm actually okay with that because that's kind of the one that I was like most excited to
Yes.
see.
Yep, same here. Yep.
So I'd watched American Fiction. So I watched Killers of the Flower Moon, and I was like, that was one I was just like, I kept putting it off because I was like, it's
Yeah.
long, it's gonna
Yep.
be, but it was. I mean, it was. It deserves its
It's the same reason
nomination.
why I haven't seen Oppenheimer. I know it's good.
Yeah.
I just it's hard. I get more excited for a 90-minute piece of trash than I
Yeah.
do, a 3-hour thing done by one of the most masterful filmmakers that
I
we have
mean,
working
the
today.
difference is, and because Oppenheimer is very purposefully avoids the outcome of the developing an atomic bomb, it's not quite the trauma show that Killers of the Flower Moon is. But
Right.
I gotta say that I mean I mean Killers of the Flower Moon was an excellent film. I'm not gonna get I'm kind of like going through a bunch of stuff, so I'm not gonna go like too much into it. But I mean, and I've not seen like it's yeah, so just like I watched American Fiction and I thought it was fucking hilarious. I thought Jeffrey Wright was fantastic.
Yeah,
It's
I
like
like him a lot. Yeah.
It's like you kind of get into these arguments as to whether only like serious films should get nominated, and whether like something like American Fiction is nominated more because they want to recognize Jeffrey Wright's body of work as opposed to the film itself. But
Yes.
I still thought it was funny as hell, and it was sharp and insightful, and it kind of made you think about things differently, which is kind of what, to me, like it's not. The Oscars is just not, it's not about recognizing movies that might be the best, in their craft for that year. That can represent different
Yeah.
things.
Yeah, sometimes it almost feels like they're just given a participation trophy because they've snubbed somebody like Peter Jackson so many times before.
Right.
And finally they're like, well, this wasn't his best movie, but yeah, Lord of the Rings.
Exactly.
Whatever. Let him have it.
Exactly.
Right. Right. Just like, we watched The Holdovers, which was fantastic. Even though the trailer seemingly gives it all away, and it kind of does, but at the same time, it's like, it's the stuff that happens, it's the whole length of the movie, like everything
that
kind of happens in there. So that was great. Past Lives, watch that. That was fantastic. Very slow, and not slow in a bad way. It just really gives the characters and the story time to breathe. And it's a different kind of take on the, missed connections type of thing that sometimes it's not like a Sliding Doors where it's like, oh, what if I had married this guy or whatever? Like, it's not like that at all. But there's a lot of those feelings of, curiosity around what had happened if I had stayed and been with this person. Really great performances there. But the one that outside of Poor Things though, I watched Maestro, which so I'm not a biography person and I'm not a show tunes person and I'm not a classical music person. So you're like, why the fuck then are you watching a biography about Leonard Bernstein? But I watched it because it was nominated. And I will say, like, Bradley Cooper is an incredibly talented director. His visual style and his creativity when it comes to something like this, where you're telling a love story that's intertwined with music that spans from conducting and classical to West Side Story, like the way, Out on the Town or whatever it's called, like the way that he chose to represent that, I thought was fucking fantastic. The problem is, every time I looked at Leonard Bernstein, I saw Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
Which there's nothing wrong with that per se. Like he did a great job. It was a fantastic performance, but it was just really hard for me to see past Bradley Cooper. And I've seen Bradley Cooper in other things. Like when we watched what was it? What was the Del Toro movie that was nominated? Nightmare Alley.
Oh no, yeah.
I didn't see Bradley Cooper. I just saw his character, but for some reason, I don't know if it's because he was playing another real person where that's where the disconnect was. But I mean, that being said, it was still, really good.
Yeah, that's he's such a weird cat for me because he's so fucking talented.
Right.
But at the same time, he continuously is put in roles where I'm like, is he really the best choice? Like a Del Toro movie.
Yeah.
It's a remake, of a classic. And Del Toro was like, yes, Bradley Cooper. Yep. Yeah. Like really?
I think.
And it's not that he's bad, but it's just like he's never my go-to when, like, if I'm, like, doing a, like, fan casting of something, right?
Right.
I'm like, there's a Crow remake.
Right.
I'm not like Bradley Cooper. Like,
right.
It's not that he's bad. I genuinely think the guy's talented, but also I never think about Bradley Cooper until he's in some shit.
It's like, I think the last thing for me, honestly, I mean, I haven't seen everything that he's been in, but like Silver Linings Playbook, but that was before he launched him. Where it was much easier to just kind of see the character and not Bradley Cooper.
Right.
But
I mean, he was really good in that that thing with Lady Gaga. I like that movie.
I've not seen that. But
he's very good in that. But I mean, I buy Bradley Cooper as a drunk country singer.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's Chris Christopherson version 2.0.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But I feel kind of weird about saying this, but one of the movies I was most excited to watch was The Zone of Interest. And if that movie doesn't win an Oscar for best sound design or sound or whatever they call it, like I don't know then like where the bar is. Because
I mean, for me it's still -1. Like that that needle drop when the original Godzilla theme kicks in at minus ones. You know, that's god tier in my opinion.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that. But what Zone of Interest is it's two separate movies. It's a movie about a family and with a workaholic dad who just happens to be the commandant, a commander of Auschwitz, right?
Mm-hmm.
And his family having a life right outside the camp. So it's kind of like a somewhat mundane family drama. And it's a movie about what happens in Auschwitz. The thing about that second movie is it only takes place via sound. You never see anything that happens in Auschwitz. You only hear it.
Oof.
And there's one scene in particular where you kind of see the aftermath of it. And Jonathan Glazer, who, you know, used sound to really good effect in Under the Skin, basically told his sound guy or sound designer, engineer, whatever, is basically like, I'm going to go make a family movie. You have a year to learn about Auschwitz. And so they had to research all the sounds of what happened in the camp, the flora, Jesus the Christ, fauna.
Yeah.
They ended up going to like France during some labor riots, and because they didn't want people just like in a sound booth going, you know, and like recording sounds of different things. And the thing about this movie is that you can never get away from the sound. There's always something, even if it's just the roar of the furnaces. And so and it's always there to where it's drawing your attention away from kind of what's happening, but right outside your ability to really focus, like, you know, like they said that they didn't want to have gunfire all the time because then that would just meld into the background. So it's like,
yeah,
certain punctuation, like things like that are just, and I mean, the shit that you hear is just awful, and because you never see it, it's just left to where
that's fucking nightmare fuel.
It absolutely is. And then you contrast that with people who are living their life also hearing it at the same time. You know, and so it's like, it really is like, I think it from a perspective of storytelling, I've genuinely not seen anything like this before.
Yeah.
And it was like, I mean, it's a terrible movie to watch. Like, stop. Like, it's not a movie you could recommend because it's so awful.
Yeah. I kind of had the same reaction to, we were not going to talk about it yet because you haven't seen it yet, but The Iron Claw is kind of that way. It's a great movie, but it is fucking miserable.
Yeah.
From start to finish. It's just like, it's crushing. Like the weight of this story is just, you're just sitting there like, why the fuck am I watching this?
Right. And it's funny because you and I watch so many horror movies where it's just like misery start to finish, kind of like laughing at it because it's like, there's a difference between both of these movies are true stories. Right.
Right. Exactly.
So it's one thing to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre and be like, you got put on the hook. You know, it's another thing to watch these movies and just be like, oh, that happened.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? And I don't know what that's the stigma. I don't know what that says about it. But it's funny that horror never gets noted. Like, the closest we're ever going to get, I think, to a horror film in the Oscar talks is when Del Toro won for Shape of Water, and that's not a horror film.
No,
but you know, but it's funny to me how people that turn their nose up at the notion of horror will watch the most depressing, disturbing shit on earth. You're like, that's worthy of an award.
like last year, like All Quiet on the Western Front. How is that not a horror movie?
Good God.
How is that
man.
Not a horror movie?
Ugh. I mean, about a soul crusher. Like, even and I keep talking about it, man. And speaking of musical cues, probably outside of Godzilla Minus One, and the end of Clerks 2. One of these single greatest musical cues of all time, Bones and All.
Yes. And at the very end.
God.
That thing destroyed me.
Yes. You were talking about a soul crushing.
I went for a car. I had to go pick up a gift card for Linda, and I'm driving along going, is this worth it? Living? Is this?
Right. right.
Yeah. Like, in a world where that could happen, and it's not even real, like, it fucked me up so bad.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was that just final, that twist of the needle. Like, oh, do you feel bad? All right. And you're just like, oh.
Yeah. You signed up for this. You did this to yourself.
You did this to yourself. Yes. Yes. 100%. So, so the only one I have left is Poor Things, which I'll watch this week. And I do have the Iron Claw. I just haven't watched it yet.
Enjoy.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. When you watch that trailer, you're like, well, that doesn't look like a fun wrestling movie.
No, it's not. Well, no, and the other thing is it's amazing how seriously it's played. And not that it's not a serious thing, but I at moments I was like, does the guy who did this know that wrestling is scripted?
Right, exactly. Like, where's Coco Beware? Like, I don't think this, like, does he know, like, this does not seem like WrestleMania at all.
No, like, wrestling is way more fun than this.
Yeah, like, he has not smelled what The Rock is cooking.
No, he has no idea what The Rock is cooking.
The Rock is cooking death and misery.
Exactly. And again, not that you know, wrestling is sports entertainment. So they are athletes. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But like, at the same time, and it's a business, right?
Right.
And the Iron Claw certainly gets into the business aspect of it. But again, like, it's played as if the outcome to these matches is like in question. And then my understanding that it isn't, right?
Like, to their credit, though, at that point in time, people didn't know that.
Right, but it
wasn't, right? Like, I remember, like, when you would watch wrestling and people were like, no, man, it's real. And you're like, is it? You know.
Right, but I mean, you'd think the people involved at least knew that, you know, I'm going to win or, you know, whatever. And, yeah, in this movie, they don't seem to know that.
Interesting.
And that might just be my ignorance. Like, maybe I just don't know how wrestling works, but, I assume when they enter the ring, they have a general idea as to how the match is supposed to go.
I would think so too. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was a good movie, but.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. All right. Well, what we are here to talk about is the fourth season of True Detective Night Country. So before we get into it, like, how much True Detective had you watched prior to, because I know, you know, as we talked about last week, you're not a fan of shows. Detective was away for quite a while.
I loved the first season.
Like, yes, me too.
It was amazing. I loved how it kind of towed the line of the supernatural, but it never really went there. Did not like season two. I watched all of it.
Yeah, that was terrible.
I didn't watch season three because two was so bad.
Yeah.
And then this one I only watched because Issa Lopez was the showrunner.
Yeah, so three was better for sure, but it's like, you know, I remember most of season one because I loved it. That's still my, even after this season, that's still my favorite. Season two, I just remember, like, Rachel McAdams and her knife, where she was like, stab him! Pop, 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 pop. Like, what the fuck?
I vaguely remember. I think it was Vince Vaughn, right?
Vince
like,
Vaughn was in it. Colin Farrell was in it. Because
Vince Vaughn looked very confused.
Yeah.
And so was I.
I was
so
confused. Like... Yeah, for sure. And then season three, Mahershala Ali. I remember him in old man makeup.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I remember the promos for it, but I didn't watch it.
Yeah, it was like, you know, it was basically him kind of. It was the same type of thing as one in that it kind of kept going back and forth between him as an older detective. I want to say he was starting to get like early onset dementia and then kind of remembering back when he was younger. But like you figure there was 4 years between season two and season three. And now another 4 years between three and four. So which brings us to, season four. So Issa Lopez was the showrunner and I think directed. I want to say she directed all of
it. She directed most of it, not all
okay.
of it.
Not all of it. Okay. Jodie Foster, Callie Rice, were the kind of the main cops. So this is set in Alaska, in Ennis, Alaska. And it's like right before kind of the dark, the long night, which is when, you know, similarly if you've seen 30 Days of Night, when it's like, you know, you're not going to see the sun for a while. And these eight guys who are operating this Arctic research station go missing. And then Jodie Foster, who plays she's a cop, like a local PD, and Callie Rice plays a sheriff's, a deputy, if I remember correctly. They're kind of on the case, and they have a prior history because they had worked a case before, trying to find out what was happening to this woman who was being abused. But then kind of add into it, like, Jodie Foster's son had died when he was young. Callie Rice, there was a girl named Annie Kay who had been murdered earlier and gone missing. And so there's like kind of all this stuff happening. And then these eight guys go missing and then are found in the ice, basically all kind of smushed together with
butthole naked.
Just
stuck together,
stark naked, stuck together, eyes clawed out. Screaming, you know, and it's like, okay, what the fuck happened to these guys? And then, you know, and then it kind of goes from there. You know, I was so excited when I heard that Issa Lopez was going to be running the show because, you know, Tiger's Not Afraid was one of our favorite movies the year that it came out. She's a very talented director, storyteller. So it was really, you know, and this being a very different type of setting for this show, and then of course the cast being what it was
it's amazing. Like I said, you know, like you said, I mean, we love Tigers, but I still feel like, and like, you know, like the rumored thing was she was working with Del Toro on a werewolf thing after Tigers, and that was very exciting. But this is like, you know, an established IP on a much larger scale than I think anything for any opportunity she probably had, has had before.
Right.
And I feel like she nailed it.
Yeah.
For the most part, I don't feel like it stuck the landing. But it was, God, man, going from Tigers to collabing with Del Toro to working with Jodie fucking Foster, like, oh my God.
And you know, I mean, that's just, I can't imagine for her what that must be like.
Yeah, like she's so cool, man. Like, she's been on the, I keep talking about it, but the King Cast is my favorite podcast. And she did an episode, I forget what book she picked, her first episode, but she actually came back on a few weeks ago kind of to promote Night Country. And she just basically, she didn't even pick like a book or anything. She basically, they just brought her on to talk, and it was so good. You know, listening to her talk about, you know, kind of how excited she was to work on True Detective and what a fan she was in season one. And that's why she brought back the little, you know,
the spiral
thing
and the yellow, yellow king. Yeah.
Yeah. And she kind of wanted to like give little nods and almost tie, you know, things together and all that stuff. And even like, yeah, the lady, the weird lady who like was skinning the deer or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like how she tied to the first season, which I completely didn't. I missed that altogether because it's been so long since I watched it.
Yeah. So the tie there, and I'm comfortable spoiling this stuff. The tie there is that Rose either was dating or knew Rustin Cole's father.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And so she had kind of seen him because he kind of appears as a vision in the show, and you don't realize who it is until later. And then when you go back and you remember Rustin saying that his dad died in Alaska, or he right. was from Alaska and his dad had died. And so, you know, she knew his dad, and he just basically wandered off into the ice and died. So, yeah. And I personally really enjoyed the ties to the first season. To me, it didn't feel like any kind of fan service or anything. It felt genuine because, you know, the there's this company that's behind the research station. There's a company that's doing mining in the area, and the research station is supposed to basically, like, kind of be doing research to make sure that the mine isn't having, like, a negative impact, among other things that they're doing. And the company, when they kind of do some more research, is tied to I think it's the same company that all the different shell companies were tied to in the first season. Like, the first season very much starts off as being kind of a supernatural thing, and then you realize that what it seems like is there's, like, a ring of sex trafficking that's all kind of being covered up by folks with ties to this large corporation, and that corporation is the one running the mine that's also sponsoring the research station in this season. And so to me, that felt like a natural extension. It didn't feel like it was tacked on or that it was gratuitous or fan service. It just felt kind of normal. And I felt this season, while it leaned more heavily into the supernatural and was comfortable not explaining it. Like, it was funny, this guy, I don't work with him directly, but we're in the same Slack channel talking about movies, and he was just like, you know, basically saying how, like, you know, there wasn't a natural explanation for a bunch of the stuff. Like, he didn't like it. And I was like, yeah, it's supernatural. There's not going to be one. Like, that's kind of the point, right? Like, and so, whereas I felt the first one was like it was pointing towards a supernatural thing, but then it kind of wasn't. This one I felt was doing something similar. The ending, the resolution of once you find out what happened was, I agree with you, it didn't really stick the landing, but it kept the door open to some of the more supernatural aspects.
Oh, absolutely.
Of the story.
Well, you know, it and I said this, and I guess it's probably on me for, like, being kind of surprised, but it had a lot of similarities to Tigers. And I didn't necessarily think that was going to be the case when I started it, but, you know, that's probably on me because, you know, you and I watched Tigers and we loved it, right? But I still don't feel like a lot of people know what that is. And And so, you know, to be given the opportunity to take over something, you know, to take on something like True Detective and kind of put your spin on it. Of course, like, she integrated, you know, some of that stuff. And it surprisingly for me, really was similar to Tigers, you know, down to, like, was it there, was it not there?
Yeah.
Polar bear, right? Instead of
right,
a tiger.
Right, right.
But I like that she, you know, it very much leaves a lot of it open-ended. All it does tie up a lot of the strings and answers a lot of the questions. It doesn't answer for everything. And that, I like that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need everything explicitly laid out.
No.
You know, so many times we watch things and they just beat you over the fucking head with what they're doing. You're like, yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
And no,
You
know, I like something like this where it's like, you know, did she die? Did she go away? You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And, you know, it lets you interpret the ending the way that you want to.
And that's what she said. She was like, you know, she said, I'm not going to tell you what happened. Like, I'm going to let you, like, how you watch it, how the viewer watches it and interprets it. That's that's theirs. Like, it's not my place to tell you.
That's one of the things that she, when she was on the KingCast talking to the guys, and I guess they had sent them the episodes early or whatever, but neither one of them had seen the whole thing. But when, you know, when they said, well, yeah, we got the episodes early or whatever, and she was like, oh, what did you think? Like, what, you know, like, she was so excited to hear what they thought about the end.
Yeah.
And, you know, neither one of them had gotten to the end yet because they're posers. And if you're listening to this and, you know, we would watch the whole thing before we did the episode.
I would absolutely. Are you fucking kidding me? Of course I would.
So I'm just saying. So we would have gotten there and we could have answered her question, whereas the boys of the KingCast could not. But it was just the excitement in her voice when she heard that they had gotten the episodes early, and she wanted to know how they thought about what they thought about the end. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, that's so cool to me. Like,
yeah,
you know, she obviously knows how she feels about it, but she's so genuinely excited to hear people's reactions. And it pisses me off that, I guess it did really well, overall, because they're giving her another season.
Right.
But it's to these assholes who are like, shitting on it on the internet or whatever, I guess.
Well, I mean, Nick Palazzo, like, fucking, like, why are you boosting people? Like, what a bad look, right? Like,
you're right, exactly.
Why are you boosting this? That's totally unprofessional. That's completely wrong. Like, it just makes you look like a dick. Like, I am so less inclined now to watch anything this guy does in the future because you come off sounding like a fucking baby.
Exactly. Like, and it's not to say that, you know, I need everybody to like everything I like. That's not my point.
No, that's not mine either. It's that you don't have to say anything.
Exactly.
You're an executive producer on the show. So if it does well, you do well. Mm-hmm. And just because it wasn't something that you liked or was your thing, saying nothing is always right there.
Yep.
Right.
Exactly.
And it costs nothing, and it doesn't make you look like a dick.
It doesn't diminish anything that came before it. Doesn't shit on anything you did.
Right.
It's, yeah, so. But I'm glad, you know, good on her for embracing, you know, the people that love it. And she wants to continue, like, those conversations. And I hope, you know, I don't know because I don't know her, but I hope she just ignores, you know, the bullshit. And I mean, we're doing a podcast, but I'm so goddamn tired of the internet, man.
I know. I know. My list of people I would strangle in their crib just grows every day. And now it includes, like, anyone who invented a social media platform.
Yep.
Like, if I get a time machine, y'all are on fucking notice because I have a lot of work to do.
Well, it's like if you and I somehow ended up hetero life mates and it's going to be the end of Jay and Bob Strike Back.
We're just
tracking down everybody who ever said anything on the internet and kicking the shit out of them.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, I mean, yeah, it's the fact that, like, people still continue to get worked up about things when, I mean, the option to not watch something is there, and you can just rewatch the thing that you like. Like,
we're nearly 200 episodes in. It's 7 years almost into this show. How many things have we ever? How many episodes have we ever done where we just shit on something?
Right. Right.
Like, why do that?
Right. And also, why? Yeah, I mean, it's either not for you or it. I mean, it. Yeah. 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 But, you know, I kind of getting back to the show itself, one of the things I really liked about it, and I liked from having her as a showrunner, because I think it's a direct reason, or I should say a result of her being showrunner, is the focus on being on, you know, Native women, right? Like, you know, in when you talk about kind of like Native populations in the United States and the level of suicide and alcohol abuse and things like that, you know, the elevated levels of it, it's in those populations, it's like a lot of that burden ends up falling on the women, and you have higher rates of, like, you know, domestic abuse, violence towards women, trafficking, that type of thing. So it was really, like, it was good to see, you know, when you're talking about this story, how much of the leads are women, one of whom is Native, and the story focused on the death of a Native girl, and then the community, you know, who they were talking to, and then kind of ultimately what the resolution of it was, still kept it focused, you know, in that community. And it was just kind of you know, it was nice to see that. I mean, at the same time, it's like, you know, it really bums me out that, like, Reservation Dogs isn't on TV anymore, because it's like, you don't want all of your representation of Native people just to be like shitty things happening. And Reservation Dogs was such a fun, positive show with such great performances, and those kids were just so fucking talented. It's like, it's like that was a show that was just like kind of showed that, you know, it doesn't have to all be bad shit. There can't, there is bad shit, but it doesn't all have to be bad shit.
Well, I think for me, it speaks to how good, you know, the season was and how talented she is, because it very much is, you know, kind of focused towards women and native people, but like it doesn't like force that, right? Like it's just a really good show. It just happens to have strong female characters.
Right.
And that I think is the coolest thing about it to me. Like not the coolest thing, but it was just a really good show. Right. But it's like, while, you know, Jodie Foster is amazing. She always has been. I didn't know Callie Reese. Is that? Navarro. I didn't know who that was.
Me neither. This is the first I'd seen her in anything.
Yeah, like I guess she was an MMA fighter like before. I didn't know that.
She's a boxer. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She is phenomenal.
She's really good.
So good.
Yeah.
Like you expect Jodie Foster to like steal any scene Jodie Foster's in, but bro, she was right there with her, like giving it right back to her. She was so fucking good. She was my favorite character. Cause Jodie Foster's character, good God, man, you talk about somebody who's got too much shit going on. Like she's like this woman wakes up and life is just like, well, now this, and she's like, all right, you know, I'm kicked today in the dick. And it's I would give up, man. Like she's more fucked up than I am. Like,
Although, I mean, I loved seeing just like all the little choices that both actresses made. In playing the character, especially, I mean, Jodie Foster is just like, I mean, yeah, she's a fucking legend. Like, what are you going to, you know?
Yeah.
What are you going to say? Right.
I mean, I can't imagine, like, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if this was Callie Reese's is first thing or like first acting gig or something like that. But imagine being like told, yo, you're going to play this like badass, you know, cop, but your boss is Jodie Foster. I'd have been scared shitless, and she wasn't, man. She was like, I'm just going to fucking go for it. And she's so fucking good.
Yeah. Yeah, she really is. And it's like, it's funny because, you know, the last kind of big kind of I don't know if you want to call it a murder show, sure, was Mayor of Easttown, right? With you know, and which opened itself up to so much kind of parody with like you know, Saturday Night Live or whatever, and it's just like you know, I feel like, you know, for True Detective to have been gone for as long as it was and then come back as strong as it did, like, it really is. Because I had always felt like the show was chasing that first season. And it was always disappointing to me that it wasn't as good. And so it was really great to see it come back and just really get that vibe and the performances be as strong as they were, and it being such capable hands, that it really does make me excited. Because I mean, I'll be honest, like after the second season of True Detective, I was like, well, all right.
You know me, and like we talked, you said it before, me and shows, man, it takes a lot. And I've and for whatever reason, I don't want to think that it's because there's just not that many movies to be excited about right now. I don't want to think that, but I've been watching a lot of fucking shows lately. So,
well, it is definitely a downtime for sure. I mean, like, you know, not necessarily, I mean, when not counting kind of the Oscar stuff, but it's like, I mean, that was a big part of the reason why I was excited to see Dune in the theater. Was I was like, oh my God, finally, like something that might be good in the theater. Like,
yeah. Right, exactly.
Like, that is amazing, you know.
I mean, listen, I what, we're 3 months in? 2 months in, I guess.
Yeah.
and I'm looking at my letterbox, and this is the least amount of movies that I've ever seen.
I mean, I watched both
2 months, like
Darkstalkers, for fuck's sake. I watched the first one, was like, this movie is fucking terrible. And then 2 days later, I was like, all right, you know,
I need more.
Yeah.
My favorite movie of the year is still Godzilla Minus Color. So, I mean,
yeah, right. Exactly. Like, yeah.
My favorite movie of 2024 is my favorite movie of 2023.
Right.
Without color.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, but, yeah, so I'm, you know, it was really fun. I'm saying it's fun to watch is kind of silly given what they cover, but it was just.
Oh, good. One more thing, real quick though. Yeah. Shouts to the effects team.
Yes.
That put together that that mass of bodies.
The dude sickle.
Yeah, that shit. Oh, and I saw like she was posting some stuff to her Instagram, like behind the scenes and stuff like that. That's the first thing I saw.
Oh
was
God!
That mass. And she was talking about how talented her effects team was. And yeah, man, that shit, big time thing vibes, like,
yes,
you know, it's really something else, as fucked up as it is. Like it's very cool.
Yeah, it was gross.
Fucked up. Yeah, it was gross as shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh. And I just recently watched the, what's it, the Detlof Pass incident?
Bernie
Harlan or whatever. And, yeah. But I was like, yeah, that's gross.
Yeah. There's a really, I don't know, there's a really bad found footage movie about that, too. I can't remember the name of it.
I'd have seen it.
Yeah, it's been years since I watched it. I went through like this thing where I watched a lot of. There's a Frankenstein one that's boring as shit except for the last 7 seconds. But
oh, I remember you talking about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're looking for the monster. They're like, the monster's still out there, but he's like out in the Arctic or whatever.
Yeah,
and they
yeah,
go out
yeah.
on this expedition. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, real quick, on the games front. So, I started playing Dead Island 2. Mm-hmm. I finished The Man Who Erased His Name. I got all the achievements for it, which is the first and last time that'll ever happen for a Yakuza game.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. It was very different you know, from some of the other ones, especially with the secret agent stuff. But it's still a game.
Well, I was going to say, they changed those, right? Because they went from a beat-em-up to like this.
This was still a beat-em-up.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they went away from that. Because I was like, was yep. like a dragon where it became like almost like yep. a tactics style game or something.
Yeah. So my understanding is this game takes place at basically the same time that Like a Dragon does.
Okay.
So at the end of it, it kind of spoils, like if you were to play these games in the correct order, you would play Like a Dragon first and then mm-hmm. you play this one, because this one kind of spoils the ending of Like a Dragon.
Okay.
And then teases Infinite Wealth.
Okay.
No, it's a beat 'em up for sure. Yeah. But so I started playing Dead Island 2, and I was enjoying it, but then for some reason I was not sure why, because this is not an uncommon thing for games, is I got to a point with it where I realized that like all the weapons I had, because you know I'm a hoarder in these games,
mm-hmm.
so like all the weapons I had were like too low of a level, and I didn't want to spend money to raise your level, and the game is very generous with giving you weapons, so
yeah.
it's not like if I was just like, fuck it. I mean, it would have been pretty easy for me to say, fuck it, I'm just gonna, you know, scrap all this stuff and take the materials, and then I have my weapons that have the mods and the perks on them, and those are still useful now, and then I'll just pick up new shit. But then, like, I opened up a gate and a killer zombie, like, they're all in Dead Island 2, a killer zombie is a zombie that's so high level it's got a skull instead of like a level number.
Yes, yeah, that's the game telling you probably shouldn't be here right now.
Well, it's just, I was where I was supposed to be. It's just that there's like the sub story with Scott's like, oh, you got to go to all the pools in Beverly Hills, and that way you can uncover the message and open up and get a cool ass weapon. And I opened up this door to go to a pool, and this Crusher zombie in a cheerleader outfit came out and fucking one-shotted me, and I was like, yeah, I'm good. And it, you know, and I was trying to think why this is different, because that's how RPGs work, right? Like, you're always looking for better gear. That's how, you know, I mean, shooters work, right? Like, as you progress through the campaign, you get better guns. I think it's just, for whatever reason, I just didn't feel like dealing with inventory in that way. Like, I'm part of it, I think, is like I'm playing Knights of the Old Republic 2. And I mean, the reality is, in those games, once you get a lightsaber, it's like, I don't need anything else. Like, yeah, there's different crystals and different things you can do to put in your lightsaber to make them better. But the lightsabers are the best weapons in the game. So once you get a lightsaber, and you're also a Jedi, so that's what you're supposed to have. But once you get a lightsaber, like, you're done. You don't have to give a shit about... I mean, yeah, for your party, but man, fuck them. Who gives a shit about that?
Right. Yeah. I would always use a lightsaber, but, like, I would, like, have all these modifiers and grenades, and like I would set up like 19 turns ahead in the fight to do all this other shit. But my main like way to attack was always lightsaber.
Yeah. Oh, mine too, for sure. Like, I might throw a grenade, you know, every once in a while, but for the most part, yeah, I'm absolutely just fucking going to town. Lightsaber and force powers. Like, I can drain the life from you and you die. Like, why am I not doing that? Like, that's silly. That's stupid for me not to do that. But yeah, I don't know, for some reason in this game, I just like it just kind of, you know, was enough of a turnoff that I was like, yeah, I'm good. And I really don't know why. I mean, I had built a flaming, you know, claymore and a you know, a shock this and a impact that, but yeah,
that's
weird.
The fun of these games. Like, we kind of talked about it, but yeah, I love Dead Island. I really liked it too. I'm not, it's you know, the nostalgia for the first one talking. You know, I played it with Gene and my brother, and we played it a lot first one. And then like there was like a sequel, and then there's a weird third game that's not first person. It's a third person like cell shaded game.
Dead Island?
Yeah. Oh, wow. It's called Survive Dead Island or something like that. It has a different title, but yeah, because the first one was just Dead Island, and there was Riptide, which was I guess technically was a sequel, but felt more like DLC to the first game because it's just more of the same. And then there's that third person Survive Dead Island that I didn't play that much of that one. I have it, but you know, by that point, because like again, like me and my brother and Gene played the shit out of the first two,
right?
And that's why I bought, you know, all of us copies of Part Two for Christmas this year. And like I said, I've only played it with Gene, but it's one of those things where it's like it's silly as shit. You really don't take it seriously.
No.
And it's so fun to just fuck around with you know, the co-op. Like,
and
by yourself,
that's the thing. I think
that's probably the thing, yeah.
Yeah, I think in co-op it would be a lot of fun.
It's so much fucking fun, dude. Like, like one of the first things I bought was the dropkick. It's like,
oh, the dropkick. I like the wrestler. I do that's the wrestler kick, right?
Yeah. So I'll just run towards a zombie and like fucking drop kick it all the way across the map, and then like Gene hits it with fucking a lightning hammer and shit. It's like that shit right there is why I love Dead Island. It has nothing to do with
that,
the story.
That would be
like
It's like the difference between playing Far Cry by yourself and alone, right? Like Far Cry by yourself becomes a bit of a slog.
Right.
You're just kind of like, whatever.
But hey, if I get in a helicopter with stupid Chris and I have a parachute and he doesn't, and I aim that bitch towards a mountain and I jump out.
Right.
And then while I'm parachuting safely to the ground, I watch his dumbass explode into a mountain.
Right. Like, right. Yeah. Or like you know, in the whatever the Nepal one was, where it's like when I would play with Petey and I was like, are we going in quiet? And, oh, you're on an elephant? All right. Like, I guess we're going in loud. He's like fucking 50 yards away. The elephant's trumpeting and he's already flinging guys in the air. It's like, okay, loud it is. You know, shit like that.
Like even five, right, is bad as that game was in terms of like the story or whatever, right? Because we've talked about that a lot, but at the same time, do I remember getting in a fucking semi with mounted machine guns on the hood and running over motherfuckers? Absolutely, I remember that. You know, that shit's fun as fuck.
Right.
So, you know, it's one of those things. You kind of make your own fun with something like Dead Island because it's just a zombie game. Like, there's no, you don't really care about the story. If you go into Dead Island looking for a story, like, that's kind of on you, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, it basically just feels like, oh, get out of California. You know,
yeah, that's
like,
it.
There's going to be people that want to stop you, and there's going to be people that are with you, and it's like, you know, beyond that, really, who cares?
Somebody's going to double cross you at some point. It's, you know, it's video game 101, but the fun that you have in a game like that, I think it comes down to kind of who you play it with and you know, the silly shit that you do.
And then I played, it's a walking simulator, for lack of a better word, on Game Pass. It's called Return to Grace. And the idea is that you're this like archaeologist who lands on Ganymede, a moon of Jupiter, because you think there's this like long lost AI on the planet, and you're trying to basically find it, and then along the way you kind of find these components of the AI, you know, one that represents like logic and empathy and things like that, and then you basically just try to like recover the AI, and it's very short. It was a pretty easy game for me to get all the achievements for. I think I managed to do it in like a weekend, but and there's, you know, there's some light puzzling, but nothing too bad. I mean, it's a, you know, it's an independent walking simulator, so you kind of know what you're getting. But it was I enjoyed it quite a bit. The voice acting was quite good. You know, the story was kind of open ended, especially at the end. I was really surprised at how good the voice acting was. So I really enjoyed it. And like I said, I mean, it was short. I mean, you could, if you don't care about achievements, I mean, you could probably do it in a couple hours. I think I did it. It took me, I don't know, maybe 2.5 hours to do one playthrough. And then I had to redo it just to mop up. And that took me maybe 45 minutes. So,
You played another one that I actually downloaded and started. So I have this, you know, the rewards program or whatever.
Oh yeah.
On Xbox. So they basically, like, you do certain things. Like, I have to, I go to the Xbox app on my phone every morning and I play, the Xbox version of Bejeweled. I forget what it's called.
Yeah.
And you get like 30 points for playing Bejeweled, and then you get, so it increases like every week, if you log into the Xbox app, the first day it's 5 points, second day 10, and it kind of progresses like that. And so it's not a thing I ever paid any attention to until I had so many points that I was close to actually being able to like get a reward, right?
Yeah.
And so I've been trying to get 46,000 points so I can get a $50 Xbox gift card.
Oh, nice.
So
I have like a $5 card that I need to use soon because right. something similar.
So I'm about 400 points away from a $50 gift card.
Nice.
And it's basically just like playing an RPG, but like for free shit, you know, like it's basically what I'm doing. I don't give a shit about this Bejeweled game, but I still play it
right
every morning. Cause it's just like, if you can like give me a way to waste time at work, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah,
so, 100%. So that's, but you had played this game, and I saw a YouTube video where a guy was saying it was actually pretty cool, and I fucking can't remember the name of it all of a sudden. But I downloaded it just because one of the things I have to do for like my monthly is to finish a certain amount of weekly quests, and one of the weekly one of the like quests is like earn an achievement in Game Pass. And it's the game with the Indian family, and,
Venba. It's basically
Venba. Yeah.
I
started that, and man, I just thought it was going to be an easy way to get a daily achievement, but goddamn, that shit's good.
Yeah, I love that game. Yeah,
the story, like the gameplay is it is what it is. You're just kind of following a recipe, like just to cook food, but just good. I'm so fucking invested in that story.
I know. Yeah. No, it was really good. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I guess they're gonna do. They call it DLC, but it's basically like they're going to put in the game like the actual recipes. And I was like, oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm having a blast with that. I'm going to be honest. Like, well, it's the same thing with Edith Finch. Like, I don't remember why I played that game. But,
I don't either. I did the same thing. I was like, but I don't know. I don't know if it was on sale or if it was on Steam, like something, but yeah.
I played it on the PS4, and God only knows why I got it, but good God, I'm glad I did.
Free, because I did too.
It maybe it was, yeah, maybe that's it. But
it was on PS Plus or something.
But I mean, I'm not a walking simulator guy typically, but God, I like shit like that. Like if that's what those games are, then yeah, sign me the fuck up because I love that game.
Yeah, and I mean, in Return to Grace, I mean, like I said, it's nothing like. You know, I mean, it's not going to change the world or anything, but it was well written. The characters were good. The voice acting was good. And at the end, it kind of made you go, huh? So, you know.
Yeah.
But it was funny because it's made in Ontario. It's the Ontario Creates program. And I think it's the same program that Venba was made under. And so all of the AIs have Canadian accents.
Nice.
So I was like, well, they're pretty advanced people. So, you know, that makes sense. They seem to have their shit together a little bit more than we do, so I wouldn't put it past them to be able to make a space AI, you know, the hundreds of years in the future. So,
yeah.
But, yeah. So, I mean, I basically I'm just kind of waiting for my physical copy of Baldur's Gate 3 to ship.
Right.
And that's kind of what I'm waiting on and working my way through the Star Wars games. I saw that they came out with the Dark Forces remaster, but you know, $30. I was like,
it was announced, and I don't know if it's like an official thing or like a fan made thing, but I guess the Battlefront 2 is back. Like you can play Battlefront 2 again.
I know they had redone. Yeah, they had an app for EA. You could redo. They were re-releasing.
Okay,
but
I didn't look that much into it. But I played the shit out of Battlefront back in the day. That's you know that's specifically like the first one. That's where I met a lot of you know my online friends on the Xbox. Like that's where I met Frozen. Like we played the shit out of Battlefront back then.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was like they announced it and then they like fired all of them. Just like, yeah, we're laying everybody off and no more Star Wars first person shooters. It was like, you know, people like these games, right? No,
right.
Yeah. Okay, cool. whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's crazy. Like, it seems like every day, like now,
it's
like,
even really, these
multi-billion-dollar companies, like, no, we're good.
It's like
we got laid off or canceling the stuff, and I'm like. We were going to buy that.
Yeah, I know, right? Like the Respawn Star Wars game? Like, did you not think that was going to... Yeah. Okay, cool.
That was going to print money for you.
Yeah. It just seems like all the folks just kind of overhired during the pandemic. And then also, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, they just want to... They've got to make their stock price go up. So,
right. Yeah.
But I mean, it's been a rough year for layoffs in the gaming industry for sure. Like, I mean, there are so many times now. I mean, I don't, you know, I mean, when you kind of read about, you know, Sony basically telling Bungie they need to get their shit together.
Yeah.
It's like, God, I mean, there were so many positions that I was like, well, maybe I'll apply. And I'm glad I didn't because I just would not do well with that level of uncertainty.
Well, you know, and that. It was very telling when whoever the current president at Sony is, right? And he went to visit Bungie.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, I walked in there and all I saw were like employees working super hard who were very passionate about what they're doing. And you know, they want to put out the best product they possibly can, and they're super talented and like all this stuff. And then I went to, you know, management, and yeah, they need to get their shit together.
Right. Yeah. You're like,
yeah, that checks out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately, and, you know, right. Listen, I'm a Destiny shield to the day I die, man. I love right. Destiny, but yeah, it turns out that even making the greatest game in the history of mankind, you have to deal with the same fucking bullshit that I have to deal with at my shitty job.
And so. That's the thing. It's like, I think at some point in time, the folks making the decisions just become too far removed from the folks yep. implementing the decision. Yep. So,
yep.
Yeah. But yeah, so I'm waiting for Baldur's Gate 3 to come, playing my Star Wars games, and I downloaded Pillars of Eternity and started playing that on the Xbox. I think I backed it in Kickstarter, I don't remember, and I tried to play it on the PC however many years ago, and it just didn't click with me, but I thought, well, let me give it another try, and so far I'm enjoying it, but I'm not that far in, so...
Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm staring down the barrel of the end of Bomb Rush, finally.
Oh, okay.
I finished Evil West, and then I did I replayed Castlevania Lords of Shadow for Jesse's podcast. See, I don't know. I don't really know what I'm going to do next.
Yeah.
I have so many things that you know, because Destiny being in the state that it's in right now, right. I'm not playing a lot of Destiny. I was supposed to raid last night. And nobody showed up, so oh. that kind of tells you where Destiny is at the moment. I'm excited for Guardian Games. It looks good.
Yeah, yeah. We got hoverboards.
We get hoverboards. And I like the kind of they've really turned it into a class V class thing, right?
Yeah.
So you know, like even Gambit. You can play Gambit with all hunters versus right. all warlocks and stuff like that. That's cool. Right. Is that enough to make people come back to Destiny at this point? Because I guess it's at the lowest point it's ever been at. Probably yeah. not.
No.
But I'll enjoy it. So
I just like that. Like warlocks look like Wolverine. Like, mm-hmm. That's pretty badass.
Yeah, I'm really not on board with this whole this new trend of hunters having the worst armor.
Yeah, it's really surprising because they typically had it pretty good.
Yeah, we had it good for a long time, and now I'm just like, I don't know how I feel about warlocks having better shit than us.
Don't worry, it won't last.
But hey, that warlock armor is warlock. That Wolverine armor is sick. So. Yeah. I'm probably going to buy it, I got to be honest.
Yeah. At some point in time, they'll put us back in a dress and just be like, there you go. All right, thanks.
Yeah.
Not that I have anything against dresses, but it's like, if you have a warlock, your hope is that an armor set, it looks like a trench coat and
you're right.
not a muumuu. You like you don't want to look like Homer right. Simpson when he's he's giving up.
Instead of a formal evening gown.
Yeah, it's like we don't get to do the cool, you know, we don't get to do the cool, you know, making armor sets that look like, you know, pop culture characters unless they're wearing a dress right, or yeah. a trench coat. So,
yeah,
you know, but yeah.
And so. You have the worst jump. Like, it's just.
It's very floaty. Yeah.
All the way around bad. Yeah.
It's not great. I mean, you can learn to use it, but you're also.
Oh, I still haven't, man. It's been 10 years. I can't jump.
Well, there's a reason why anytime we would do stuff and there's like, oh, you guys got to all come over here to get this chest. And I was like, I'm good.
Oh, it's my favorite thing. It happens literally every time we play. And like,
and now you know why.
At some point, Brandon's like, and that's me falling to my
yeah, head. Exactly. Like, I'm just gonna sit here and you pull me forward. I don't need whatever's in that chest. I've only unlocked helmets. I don't need another helmet. It's fine. Yeah. Well, yep.
Gotta love it.
Yep. All right, so yeah, so that's been episode 193 of Divided by Werewolves. Whatever it is we decide to talk about on our next episode, hopefully you will be here with us. So thank you again for hanging out. We appreciate it, especially as we get closer and closer to our 200th episode, which right now we have zero plans for anything special.
Anything special about it.
Yeah.
Same bullshit.
Exactly. Same shit, different day. But anyway, we look forward
to... But listen,
Yeah, exactly. Listen to it. It'll be great, whatever it is. But yeah, so we look forward to spending some more time with you in the next 2 weeks. So for myself and Mitch, thank you again. Good night and have a good night.